It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Welcome to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in the BEA, beautiful studios of Freedoms, with an S, freedomsphoenix.com, here in Phoenix, Arizona, where it's not hot yet. I've been waiting for it. I'm going to miss my summer. Global warming. Let's go ahead and tell you what we're going to be doing today. Bob Levy is with Cato. Now, he's an interesting, history. I want to make sure we get into that. We'll get into that with Bob. Bob, I got you there, Bob. Bob, I got you.
I'm here.
Bob, one thing I wanted to do is I wanted to go ahead and give the audience an impression of where you came from and who you are before we start getting into the subject, because it's going to be a controversial subject. I'll tell you guys so we don't leave you hanging. Nah, I'll tell you in a minute. Let's go ahead and deal with, you became an attorney at what age?
Went to law school when I was 50 and graduated when I was 54.
So this is, now tell the people some of the issues that you have. Did you argue the case before the Supreme Court or just take it? Or tell me your role in the Heller case.
Well, the Heller case was all about overturning the D.C. gun ban and on Second Amendment grounds. And as your listeners know, it was successful. The opinion came down in June of 2008. And I helped organize and initiate the case and was part of a three-man legal team.
Okay, now
wrote the briefs, but Alan Gura is the person who argued the case before the court.
Okay, now this is, I want to get your history because we've had, you were one of the speakers at our very first Freedom Summit in 2001.
Yes.
And this was what was so interesting to me is that you gave us a history on, I think at the time you were talking about the tobacco class action lawsuit and Microsoft Trust lawsuits and this kind of stuff.
Yes, yes.
And so this is, libertarians, man, we knew way ahead what was going to happen. We could see what was coming. All of a sudden, it was neon flashing obvious where we're going with this. And here we have a gentleman that at the age of 50 decided that he's going to go and he did what he wanted to accomplish in business and so on. He's going to go get a law degree because he wanted to go fight the man. Am I close?
You're pretty close, yeah. That's just about how it unfolded. My actual real life was back in the investments business. I was a money manager and developer of financial software. After I sold that company, I stayed on for another 4 years to run it under the new owners, and then I left and went to George Mason University School of Law.
This is extremely interesting. I want people to understand the one thing that a lot of people don't know is that you have individuals that are passionate enough about freedom, they'll make an entirely different career change to put them in a position to do what they can't get anybody else to do. I mean, does that pretty much come down to it?
Yeah, the Cato Institute is loaded with those kinds of people. You know, these are people who are being paid considerably below market rates for their talents, and yet they are driven by ideological concerns. They are lovers of liberty, and as a result, they have non-monetary compensation.
Well, when
compensation comes in the form of fighting for freedom.
When we come back from this break, we're going to go ahead and get into the details of what's driven Bob Levy from the Cato Institute and why he's been successful and why we're supporting him. We'll be right back.
There are those that just want to be left alone.
and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
I want to break free.
Yeah, we got to break free here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and Bob Levy from the Cato Institute. We, you know, this is, I think, of great interest to a lot of people, that you would have a successful businessman, that well-educated, got it going on, smart guy. And then, you know, hey, you know, there's, I mean, dang, the world is not what they told us it was in junior high, you know, when I was a kid. And I'm old enough to know better, seen the world go around. I'm going to go back to law school. I'm going to become, one of the fighters in the courts and go out and give them what fur. And it was the first things he did is he took on the case that you are allowed to defend yourself with a firearm in Washington, D.C., no less. Now, before we get on the other issue, I want to make it clear, Bob, and take this opportunity, is that that case, I remember the whole argument about doing that. The NRA did not want to do it originally, did they?
You know, we had a good case, and we might even win in the lower courts. And what we're worried about is that if we got to the Supreme Court, we would lose. So you'd end up winning the battle and losing the war. And, of course, they were not too far from wrong. You might recall that the Heller decision came down 5-4. So they were only one vote from being correct. But, of course, that one vote makes all the difference.
Well, you know, Bob, my thing is I didn't care. I need to know. Does the Supreme Court say it's not an individual right? Fine. I need to know. I was not afraid of them saying it. They go, well, they might say, one, you're confusing me with someone who gives a crap what they say anyway. Okay? That's the first problem. The other thing is that if they're going to say, I don't have that right to defend myself, thank you very much. I need to put that on a sign somewhere. Okay? So I had absolutely no problem whatsoever going and challenging that and finding out. Now, I want to get your opinion on this one other issue. They came out in support of individual right and relationship to gun ownership in Chicago. And they go, yeah, well, we're going to, you know, limit. You can't go outside your front door, kind of ouch, quit it back and forth. You know, who cares? The point that I'm making is if the federal government, the Bill of Rights is Congress shall make no law. All right. It didn't really say anything about the states. Then they go 14th Amendment. We rule everybody and so on. I got the impression, I feel like we're being teed up and here comes the driver. They've teed us up to where the federal government says, yes, we have jurisdiction over what the states can do in passing laws to individuals. Yeah, you like it now, all you patriot right-wingers, when we say the Second Amendment is individual right and the state can't regulate. But I'm afraid they're going to use that line of thinking in support of something else they got ready for us. What's your opinion?
It's a perfectly legitimate fear. I mean, the background is that, as you say, the Bill of Rights only applied to the federal government at the get-go. Of course, we found out the states can be pretty tyrannical at times, witness slavery, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And so we fought a civil war. We had post-Civil War amendments, including the 14th. The 14th was used to apply the Bill of Rights to the states. It didn't all happen at once. It was like one amendment at a time, free speech, then religion, then protection against unreasonable searches. And finally, on June 28th, they got around to the Second Amendment. And they determined that, yes, the 14th Amendment applies the Second Amendment to the states. There is the concern that you expressed that's perfectly legitimate that persons on the left will use the 14th Amendment to develop a whole array of other federal incursions on the states. But the answer to bad judging is good judging. So what we really have to do is make sure that the 14th Amendment is used properly, that judges have a theory of rights that prevents them from simply implementing their own policy preferences, that they are guided by the text of the Constitution. It's a tall order, but It is what, in fact, the 14th Amendment was intended to do, and now we have to live with it.
You know, this has been my mantra, you know, and why we started the Freedom Summit, of which we were honored to have you as one of the very first speakers. In fact, our next one this December, we have Don Brudeau is speaking again, and he was one of the first ones also. So this is Lawrence Reed from FEE and a lot of great speakers. And I know that you'll understand this rhetoric. I am of the opinion if they can enhance, maintain, expand their intrusiveness over the individual to benefit the state, if they can, they will. And this is another opportunity for them to, so for me to, you know, I don't want to get into the mindset that I'm cheerleading for the federal government, judicial branch, which is still the federal government. I mean, it's like these checks and balances. It's like Patrick Henry's saying, yeah, what happens when all three branches line up against rights of the individual? Then what? Find yourself in a free speech zone. That's what happens. Okay. So I'm going, I do not want to cheerlead for them too much, because I'm like, then you're giving them credibility for when they screw me later, which they will. So I'm glad you're there doing what you're doing to point out the all of the education that we get around these issues. But you've brought on another issue that I'm sure this audience is going to find controversial, and we are going to get down to the nitty-gritty of it: same-sex marriages. Okay. Why is that an important issue for you? Are you married? Are you gay? Is it a civil rights thing? Is it a civil libertarian thing? Is it a matter of law thing? Is it a jurisdiction thing? Are we advocating for the government getting even involved in heterosexual marriages? You know, why do I care? Why this issue?
Well, I am married. I'm not gay. It is a civil liberties issue for me, but more importantly, it's a constitutional issue. And the fundamental premise goes like this. Jefferson set the stage in the Declaration. He said, to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. Of course, that means that the purpose of government is to safeguard individual rights, and that means preventing some persons from harming other persons. So the threshold question you have to ask yourself when you're thinking about whether government should get involved is, are any rights being violated? And if so, what should government do about it? Whose rights are being violated when two gay persons decide that they would like to enter into a permanent, exclusive arrangement with shared responsibilities, probably in a common residence? Whose rights are being violated? The answer is no one's rights. And therefore, government should not be involved in limiting that activity. And that's what government is now doing with laws against same-sex marriage. The ideal would be for the government to get out of the marriage business altogether and make this a matter of private contract between the betrothed parties, maybe their families. That's the way it was for many, many years. Now we ought to get government to back off and let some religious or secular institutions recognize gay marriages. Others wouldn't. Some would call them domestic partnerships. Some would sign some other label. And if you want to join one group or the other, you're free to do so. The rights and responsibilities of the people who are involved in the marriage would be governed by contracts, just the way we do with consensual bargains that control just about all the other interactions we have in a free society.
Okay, now this is, you know, this is a concept that, you know, a lot of people, they're placed into a box. And they're placed into a box by mandatory youth indoctrination camps, a.k.a. the government school system, or religious institutions. And oftentimes, it kind of over history, they blended to be the same thing. You know, you have, you know, we're a Christian nation. All right, said who? Well, no, they did. So I'm going, all right. So we have somehow, somewhere, the most important contract an individual would ever have for the rest of their life. They are pledging, or at least, you know, as they would, you know, want it to be, an exclusive contract with another human being to be whatever it is. Then all of a sudden, the government comes in, and no matter, it's always the most important things that have to have government involvement. And I always wonder, you know, it's water. Oh, that's a municipal water supply. Water, got it. The government's got to do it. Oh, we have, defense from the evils. Government's got to do it. Police, fire, government's got to do it. We have, no matter what it is, the more important that you would think of education of your kids, government's got to do it. And they screw it up every single time. And I'm going, okay. So marriage, you have something that is a very personal, very important contract or whatever you want to call it, oath, something that used to be recognized as something that was in dominion of the church. Or if you didn't believe in any faith or anything, you just did it, called common law, whatever you want to call it. I want to know the history here in the United States. When did the government start getting involved in the idea of marriage? And why?
Well, it's a relatively recent thing. For most of Western history, marriage was a matter of private contract. And ideally, marriage should follow that tradition today. Now, over the decades, particularly after the Income Tax Amendment, the 16th Amendment, 1913, I believe it was,
okay,
government has interceded.
Okay, let's go ahead and hold it right there. We'll come back. The beginning of government involvement in the act of marriage. And he's starting with the IRS creation, and there's a bunch of other stuff to go with it. You can see where this is going. I mean, this is an important issue. I know it's a touchy point with a lot of people. Pay attention. We're all going to learn something on a much larger scale. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Turn on the tube. What do I see?
Bob Levy from the Cato Institute. We're talking about, controversial stuff. We're going to get your head a spinning, get you thinking, get your cortex working, make your mind raw with new information as it gets implanted because you need it. Okay? This is one thing that I really want to get into this because it brings up so many issues that people have no experience in contemplating and thinking this way. We're talking about same-sex marriages. From a heterosexual male, you know, he's an older generation. He went to law school at 50. He's fighting for our civil liberties all the way from guns to contract rights. He's going to Supreme Court, United States, America. And I'm telling you, here's someone that, you know, that we're going to at least have an interesting conversation. Now, we're talking about right now, I want to get into the part, where the heck did government get involved in sanctioning the marriage anyway? You know, it's like that clip from Braveheart. You know, it matters not. He is your king, and I'm going whoa. You're setting certainly if I am an individual of faith, I would way put the church or God as much higher of determining what the contract should be or who's going to recognize it and who's going to excommunicate me or whatever than I would any government. But if you're going to have a civil contract with someone, fine. You know, then you want some third party that you agree to that's going to enforce that contract. I know people, libertarians, they go down to the county recorder's office and they file a notice of whatever the heck it is, their contract, or they actually have a contract, a domestic partnership, whatever they want to call it, they do with an attorney, has a force of law that enforces contract. I get married in Pennsylvania in 1980-something, I forget, 84, 86, 84. My wife will get me. Anyway, so I'm 25 years. I get married. I move from Pennsylvania to Arizona immediately. We have our honeymoon. We go, boom, we come to Arizona. What happens? All of a sudden, the contract's different. Hey, whoa, this isn't the contractor that I got married. I married under this contract. Oh, I got a different contract. Then they start changing the contract after I got married. It's different. Oh, we're going to change it. This is the laws and how you can and can't and operate and children and divorces and all this. And I'm going, well, what the heck kind of contract is this that the government, how come I'm not able to pick a contract out of a men's magazine from one of 200 different contracts? You know, and they call them prenuptials, by the way. But I'm going, okay. So Bob is telling us about the IRS comes into existence, and all of a sudden the government has something to do with contracts. How does that work, Bob?
Well, you know, we didn't have government involvement forever and ever. In Greece and Rome, marriage was a matter of passing property down by contract down the family lines. And even in America, in colonial times, a man and a woman were considered married if they said they were. And they arranged for whatever agreements had to be negotiated between them, and if there were disputes, the disputes could be resolved in court. Well, regrettably, from my perspective, government has interceded. Most of that is because of the income tax and related taxes like the estate tax. So we have more than 1,000 federal laws now dealing with taxes or transfer payments, and state laws by the multi-thousands dealing with things like child custody and inheritance and property rights. There are two important principles here. First is, it's not necessary for government to be crafting those contracts. Private parties can do it. The second principle is, if, despite the fact that it isn't necessary, government insists on imposing obligations or dispensing benefits based on marital status and does define marriage, then we have what's called the Equal Protection Clause, and it says that government can't discriminate against similarly situated people by putting them in different circumstances. So, number one, government shouldn't be in the business. But number two, if government insists on being in the business, then they have to treat everybody equally. And indeed, that is what is going on in most circumstances. We have even the government itself is giving out benefits to same-sex partners. The criterion is not whether you're married. It's whether you present an affidavit, you identify your partner, you certify that the partnership is exclusive and it's permanent, that you have a common residence, that you have shared responsibilities, and that's considered to be enough. And even in the private sector, 60% of the Fortune 500 companies now confer employment benefits based on domestic partnership. So it's not necessary for government to get involved in defining marriage.
You know, I'll tell you, when the government, you know, one of the big things was certainly after the Civil War, you had freed blacks. Oh, my goodness, we need to have some kind of government permission, or we'd have blacks marrying whites, and now, you know, and cats and dogs, and the heavens would fall. So they're like, oh, heck no. Well, the same thing happened with gun rights. We have freed slaves. If they got the same rights as white people, they could have guns. Can't have people having guns and getting married and everything, you know, because it's always this idea that somebody must rule. And if they got a rule, what rules are they going to use to rule? You know, do we have to have rulers? Ah, this is where this is going. We'll talk about it more with Bob Levy from the Cato Institute here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, back in just a little bit.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
There's a man going around taking names, and he decides who to free and who to blame. Everybody won't be treated all the same. There'll be a golden ladder reaching down when the man comes around.
Oh, we know the man be a-coming from every different direction. Well, you know, Bob Levy knows this, and from Cato Institute, he's out there fighting the man. And, you know, because you know who the man coming around is now? It's Bob Levy. He's going, hello, and he takes all this experience from his business career, and he went to law school. You even clerked for one of the justices, didn't you?
I clerked for Royce Lamberth on the district court and for Doug Ginsburg on the U.S. Court of Appeals in Washington, D.C. He was nominated to be a Supreme Court justice, but his nomination didn't make it because they found out he smoked marijuana in law school. Then it was debilitating. Now it's almost a requirement.
Yeah, so I was thinking. I mean, that's a job requirement now. You know, the I want to get into the part where we have. I give you an example. My sister. It was years ago when she had been divorced. She was single, and she was asking me. You know, she had just gotten divorced, and all of a sudden her taxes were totally different. And she's like, "What the heck? I got, you know." And I started thinking, and I'm going, "Yeah, doesn't the 14th Amendment apply here? That you're not allowed to. Everybody has to be treated equally under the law, and that your marital status, so you have some contract that the government made up, that's going to change how much money you pay the government? What's the justification behind that?"
Well, government discriminates against people all the time. Just about any law that government passes is going to favor somebody and disfavor somebody else. The most blatant discrimination we had was, of course, segregation. And as you probably know, the schools up until 1954 were segregated, and it wasn't until Brown versus Board of Education that they were desegregated. And up until 1967, since we're talking about marriage, 16 states didn't allow white and black folks to get married. Interracial marriages were prohibited. But the Supreme Court, set that aside in a case called Loving v. Virginia. So, yes, the 14th Amendment prevents government from discriminating. But since government discriminates in all manner and means, there has to be a way of distinguishing what discrimination is acceptable from what discrimination is not acceptable. And the courts have come up with this, I think, rather convoluted scheme, but it is nonetheless the law of the land. First, if the right involved is deemed to be fundamental, then the government will have to jump through a lot of hoops to jump to justify any discrimination. If the right is not fundamental, then the number of hoops is vastly reduced, and the courts will pretty much rubber stamp whatever the legislature does.
Okay.
What's a fundamental right?
Thank you.
Well, things like marriage is fundamental.
Says who?
That's a very good question. It's deemed to be fundamental if it's deeply rooted in our nation's history and traditions.
Says who?
Well, that's what judges and the courts are all about.
They says who?
Make those kinds of decisions.
I can do a says who for a long time and
sure.
Ask the question why, you know, over and over and over, because I'm, you know, I this is an interesting thing. I mean, do you mind telling your age? How old are you, Bob?
68.
Okay, so 68, you're in the, you know, baby boomer area, you know, era. You're starting, you know, your peers are all retiring. They're starting to supposedly take advantage of all the goodies that were promised them in entitlements and so on. And then you have, I'm 49, so I'm kind of the bridge between your generation, senior citizen of, you know, I don't know, whatever, the Vietnam, well, the X generation. I mean, I'm born in 61. So my entire life is totally different than your perspective, and certainly even greater than the perspective that I have of my children's generation, that are two boys, two girls from 20 to 24. And them and all their friends and spouses, and I'm starting to have grandkids. My second grandkid's coming in about a month and a half. I got a totally different perspective from them. They got different from me. You probably have a lot different than I do. This is my question. I grew up in an era where the first memories that I have were Vietnam on the television. One of my first memories, as like 3-4 years old, we moved to Florida where my paternal grandmother was. My father is in the Air Force. We leave. We go there. He introduces me to this old woman, says she's going to be watching you during the day now. This is grandma. Okay, cool, grandma. It wasn't until a week or two later that she was like, "Well, when your dad was your age," I'm like, "You knew my dad when he was my age?" "Oh, yeah, I'm his mother." Hey, nobody explained that to me. Nobody told me that grandmothers mean that they're the mother of one of your parents. They just kind of forgot that part, okay? So I'm going, well, I'm thinking the memory I had back then was at 3 years old in 1964-65, there was enough penetration into my mind by the man that I thought the police or government issued you your grandmother, okay? That's how sick it already was back then. So I'm the whole generation that I have that being instilled in my, I bet your generation that didn't even come up. Okay. So we go up, it's Vietnam. immediately I'm a young teenager, 13, 14, whatever, all of a sudden here comes Watergate. Then you have Iran hostage crisis, the oil embargoes, Iran, the Middle East, Afghanistan, Russia, the Cold War, not going to Moscow, the economy in the early 80s under Reagan, all this. I'm graduating high school, 79. The headlines back then are almost identical to what they are now. Now, my kids go, well, you don't understand. The heck I don't. Let's go take a look at the headlines back. Oh, gee, does this look the same with the same countries? And a lot of times, certainly when we were dealing with Rumsfeld and Cheney and Bush and all, I go, it's like the same freaking people, okay? So I'm going, all right, the perspective that I have, I grew up knowing that my government were lying sacks of snot. I knew they were destructive. I knew they were not there to help me. I knew they were going to rob my generation blind, though the promise that they were going to give me whatever they promised your generation, and that it was not going to be there. These young kids now, for the past few years, as I worked very hard on this Loveolution that was going on around Dr. Paul's campaign, and as I traveled the country, these teenagers and early 20 people, they are far more informed with the internet, far more integrated, far more connected and networked together in immediate communication and understand that it's all a lie. So I'm going, okay, the continuity that we have between your generation, Bob, all the way down to these teenagers is the philosophy of libertarianism that they can agree on. Hey, man, the proper role of government, defending individual rights. They go outside that box. What did Jefferson say? You know, you alter or abolish, okay? They understand that concept perfectly well. Now, my question to you is, with that kind of understanding and the bridge that I'm trying to play over an entire, you know, the bridge generations here in America with the concept of freedom, that we get back to this heritage. Freedom is popular. Dr. Paul made it very clear that there is support for this concept, but as we go to the Supreme Court, as we go through the machinations of appealing to the government, as we petition the king, King George, we petition him over and over and over and over, there is a point that I believe we get to the, we therefore must acquiesce in the necessity. When do we stop asking and just start living? When does it happen that we just go, you know what? I don't care what the Supreme Court says. I don't care what laws they pass. I just don't care. That mean doesn't mean they're not going to come visit you. But when do we lose respect for the law, for the government, for any kind of let's go vote? You know, let's support the system. Oh, bring back the Constitution. My senior editor in Freedom's Phoenix, he can't spell the word Constitution without capitalizing C-O-N. So I'm going, you know, this is a very important question for someone exactly your position. Has the United States government lost all credibility? Should the younger generations be trying to reinstitute this concept of the United States federal government under the Constitution and count on it to protect their future?
My answer is no. You asked the question, when do we lose all respect? I'm not sure when, but it's not now. I do think the Supreme Court has been derelict on more than one occasion. In fact, I wrote a whole book about the worst Supreme Court cases of the modern era that did great damage. On the other hand, we have movement in the opposite direction. The Tea Party movement is extremely healthy. We have the Supreme Court making the right decision on guns, the right decision on campaign finance, reining in some of the affirmative action excesses, attempting to draw bounds around federal activity in some other areas. So it's not all a negative picture. There are some bright spots, and I think as long as we still have the ability to turn the bums out of office, and we do have that ability,
we're in
good shape. The problem is that the bums that we turn out are replaced by bums that we put in, and we haven't yet found a way of getting rid of all of the bums and replacing them with good guys.
Get to choose from communist candidate A or fascist candidate B, and the election laws are done in such a way to, you know, eliminate competition before it even starts. That's my first court case. I argued all the way myself, pro se, Ninth Circuit, oral arguments on 44 election laws in Arizona, because as a young man, I saw it was crystal clear what they did. They eliminated competition before it could start. I was Republican. I went independent. I go, no, I see exactly what you're doing. You scum. You have eliminated the ability for me to even, I get to go in your little, touch your computer screen and hope that it comes out right. I don't trust electronic voting to begin with. So this whole thing is, and the one thing, I want to give this Frederick Douglass quote, man. I used it yesterday and it really applies here. And it's, this struggle may be a moral one or it may be a physical one. And it may be both moral and physical, but it must be a struggle. Power concedes nothing without a demand. It never did and it never will. Find out just what any people will quietly submit to, and you have found out the exact measure of injustice and wrong which will be imposed upon them. And these will continue till they are resisted with either words or blows or with both. The limits of tyrants are prescribed by the endurance of those whom they oppress. And you're talking about the Tea Party thing and all this rising up of the people. That's exactly what has pushed them. They're not leaders. They're followers. You know, the government and the congressmen and this, even the Supreme Court, they do whatever they think they can get away with. And they're starting to realize that their credibility is going down to nothing. Just like, the President Obama and Bush, all of them, they're the same, is going down to, I look to them as what? My ruler? They get to wear the ring of Sauron? I mean, it's the ring that's the problem. It's the power. I do not concede to this kind of power. I mean, I'm getting all like Sanders Spoonerish and Rothbardian. I mean, the more I learn, the more I know that what Lysander Spooner say? He said, if the Constitution didn't cause all these problems, they sure as heck didn't prevent it. I'm telling you, Bob, this next year, I'm giving you this perspective. I deal with these young people here at Freedom's Phoenix Workshop every day. They are not looking to reconstitute or give more credibility to the very government that screwed them or think that they're going to fix it in time for them to certainly retire with any kind of, expectation that the United States federal government's even going to be there.
Yeah. Well, look, I share those concerns. But we can't compare today's government with some ideal world in which justice is ubiquitous, nobody ever suffers, and freedom is rampant. We have to compare today's world against realistic alternatives. And I think Churchill got it right when he said, democracy is the worst system there is, except for all the others.
Yeah, do we have it, though? Electronic voting doesn't even blip on people's radar screen. Whoa.
I'm just suggesting that revolution is something a step too far.
No. And I never advocate that. I never, that's why, I'm the one that did the Ron Paul Revolution logo. I'm the one that created that. I'm the one that went around the country pushing that. I'm all about the revolution, okay? The thing is that the revolution is in between the ears. This is not, I do not advocate even going up against the beast. Everybody wants to, the patriot community, we got to go take the ring of power by force if necessary. We got to go get and storm the halls of. And I'm like, what? Then you got a bunch of guys with guns in charge again. What's the difference? It's not a revolution out there. I don't want to replace them. You get rid of Obama anywhere else, it's like looking down a train track, man. It's just one after another. But we got to change us. And I tell you what the problem with us is, Bob. It is us keep thinking we need somebody to rule over us. I'm past that. I'm done. I'm just, I don't advocate replacing them. I'm advocating not caring.
Well, that's right on topic when we're talking about making marriage a private contract. That's one step in the direction that you're talking about, getting rid of the rulers, getting rid of the people that define how it is that we interact with one another on a personal level. We're quite capable of doing that.
Well, you have insurance companies that may have a vested interest. I give you an example. Men live longer if they're married, according to them. I mean, their actuaries, they sit there doing the numbers, and so what? Guess what? You want to contract with my private company to cover whatever, and I want to use marriage as a criteria, or health, or weight, or how pretty your children are, or your dog, or what? Whatever. It's a private. You can go ahead. But then here comes government again. Oh, no, you can't do that. That's discriminatory. No, we got to cover everybody. No, you got to, it's just, I'm still trying to get somewhere where, the government's here to help me and it's the truth. Where does that happen?
Well, the only place where that happens is that government does protect you from domestic and foreign predators. Of course, even there.
They create them.
Government overreaches and in part creates the very problem that it then has to protect you from.
They need to create it so that they can justify saying they need to protect me. Man, I don't know. You're losing this argument, Bob. No, I understand why you're there. I'm glad you're there, and it was our honor to have you at one of the first Summiteers. But you know, the thing is that I really respected the fact that you came back in and you went and did battle with them. But this is what I find a lot of times. You know, you get kind of, you know, if all you got's a hammer, everything's a nail. Well, if you got a law degree and you're going out, well, everything is a court battle, and it gives them jurisdiction or legitimacy. And I have no problem going to court, man. I'm all over the court thing, but it's not whether I win or not. I wanted to get them on paper saying what it is that they're saying. I go, say it. I don't care. Either way, say it. Just say it. Say it. We just all need to know. Say it. Well, what have they been saying? We're going to find out more from Bob Levy from Cato. We come back here on Declare Your Independence, and you can do it too. Don't even need a government form.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Yeah! Stop! Look around. See what's going on. Because, you know, man, it's affecting the rest of your life. We got Bob Levy on from Cato Institute doing battle against a man, doing yeoman's work out there, going, you know, see, giving them what for? Coat. But I got to ask you this question. You know, how are you planning for the future? What do you think is going to happen over the next decade?
Well, I'm pessimistic about the course of our economy, mostly because of this inflation that's likely to occur after the Fed has pumped trillions of dollars into the economy. So I'm very negative about that. I'm somewhat more positive about the rule of law and the movement of the Supreme Court in the right direction on some selected and limited topics. And, of course, a variation on your quote about the hammer is that if all you know how to do is hammer, then the kinds of problems you want to attack are nails. And what I know how to do is hammer in the courtroom. And so that's where I do battle, and that's where I think progress can be made, and in fact is being made, and that's what I plan to keep doing.
Encourage you to keep doing it. You know, Institute for Justice, you know, in fact, the first summit, we also had Clint Bullock that moved here to Arizona, Institute for Justice. Now he's working, you know, Goldwater Institute and so on. And we're very supportive of all these efforts. I'm not for poo-pooing anybody going up against a man in their own way. There is, that's the whole thing about Freedom Summit. There is no central plan for freedom. Okay. Division of labor, everybody go whip butt. But I'm glad we had this conversation because I wanted to impart, there's an entire generation that you and I both 10 years ago were wondering, where in the heck are the kids going to come from? Where in the heck are the youth going to come from? When are they going to wake up? How are they going to get the information? Do they understand what's happening to them? Are they just going to be serfs and cogs in the machine that's going to, you know, fuel the machine that's devouring their future and that of their children? Do they understand? Boom! 2 years ago, they go, we understand. Oh, and by the way, we got this internet thing. We go whip y'all butt. Well, here they are. So what are we obligated to tell them? Let's go run into the machine and fix and be one of the cogs going against and justifying what. And you can't do it. They are too savvy. I just came from Porkfest, which is a Free State Project camp out this summer. 700 people, the average age of 20-something, that all are activists around this country. We did a show live from there. We're, you know, meeting these people. I've known them over half of them I probably met over the last few years. And these people know it is not only broke, it is irrevocably busted. The Titanic is slipping beneath the waves. Everybody wants to save the ship of state. Nobody gives a crap about the people. And they're going up saying, hey, man, get in a little lifeboat. We'll go over here and watch it go down. And maybe we'll key it as it slips beneath the waves for grins and giggles. You know, this is where we're at. At the same time, what Bob, you are doing with Cato is great. It needs to be done to show where we are, what can be done, and the principles involved. Big supporter of what you're doing, Bob, but I want to make sure you know, we all understand that there's another next generation that doesn't care. They don't care what the black robes say. They've lost all credibility.
Well, again, I don't want to be in the uncomfortable position of defending the status quo, much less defending government. But I do think a lot depends on what it is that you propose to replace the current situation with.
Nothing.
Can I vote
none of the above? Well. I mean, I know that's another conversation that I'm sure, hopefully you'll come back. I had a really good time with you, and I wish we had more time, but, you know, this has been great. Bob Levy, go to freedomsphoenix.com, get all his information.